that robot voice comes in, you know it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whatever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
TLC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneak, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're just passing the time during a hurricane. Because that's a thing that exists now. I don't know. Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness. Because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring the show to you. Their generosity, their support makes this show possible. And we get to keep making new episodes because of our patrons. In exchange, they get some cool stuff, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a bevy of extra content, bonus content, just for patrons, including Feeling This, the show all about the feelings behind video games with Christian Spicer and Alex Solman. Fantastic. An entire first season, second season's trucking right along. We also have the Wednesday paid DLC program, described in our Discord this week as a show too funny to listen to while you're working out because it could cause injury. I just report it, folks. Also, you've got the audio version of the DLC book club. So much bonus content, ladies and gentlemen, for your audio and visual delights. And that's all for becoming a patron at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, the spell with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who also made landfall on the West Coast for the first time, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Did you feel it? Is it real? What's going? Is that another alert for the phone? Okay, yeah. The internet is holding, and I am here. I am happy to be here. So far, so good. Fingers crossed. It's the end of the world as we know it. Yeah. And I'm here podcasting.
We should take bets as to how long we last before internet goes, power goes, and
hey, I've solo showed. It's your turn, baby. It's your turn.
Well, hopefully we'll be with you for an entire 90-plus minutes, ladies and gentlemen, because we have a fantastic guest with us, ladies and gentlemen. We have, you know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, oh, I'm so excited because once again, DLC stands for Director of Live Action Cinema, because we have the director of 10 Cloverfield Lane, the director of Prey, and the director of a very highly regarded TJ Maxx commercial.
No, AJ Wright.
AJ Wright. I don't even know what it was. It's Dan Trachtenberg, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, Dan.
Hello. Is that this? Have you used that one before? The live action cinema?
I don't know. Have I? Cool. I don't look it up.
It's great.
Is it all right? Okay.
I love it.
As long as you approve, that's all I care about. Thank you for being here. Dan is also in the eye of the storm, I guess. You guys are in this wacky world we're living in where now hurricanes can hit the West Coast. How is everybody doing? Everybody safe? Everybody dry? How are you doing?
We're safe and dry. I'm going to plug the video version of DLC where you can watch live throughout the broadcast behind Christian in his windows to see just how turbulent the storm will get. Part of me is hoping that at some point, like, a tree smashes back there and terrifies Jeff and I. That's the
action director in Dan right there. He's just like,
if I get Final Destination, if I get Final Destination, we owe royalties, you know? So I don't.
I want Christian to be bot podcasting as the water level just slowly rises and he just keeps going. He's like, I need to finish my thoughts on video
Jeff,
games.
I can't talk about Starfield.
Hopefully all our jokes don't sound crass because hopefully no one is injured and everything is safe. And
at this point, no one has been. That's why exactly. It's safe to make these remarks.
Yes. We have a big show for you, ladies and gentlemen. I know it's the week before Gamescom, So all the news is sort of percolating. There's nothing big popping off, but we're going to have fun talking about the stuff that is happening. Plus, we have some awesome games to tell you about, some really cool stuff. So strap in and let's get the show started the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send us comments or questions or anything you'd like to know. We welcome your correspondence at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Other ways to get a hold of us and be part of the community, we have a subreddit at 5by5dlc.reddit.com and a Discord, which is also 5by5dlc on Discord with great folks hanging out, talking about all sorts of cool stuff. Take part, participate, be a member of the community. It's good fun. But Dan, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I actually thought it would be interesting to talk about No Man's Sky for the 100th time on your show. As an avid listener, I'm well aware how often you guys have talked about it in its various forms, but it's interesting to talk about it in light of that 7-year montage video that was released this week, and on the cusp of, is cusp the right word?
Yes.
On the eve of Starfield about to come out, and we will all find out. Does No Man's Sky continue to be relevant, or do we all move on to the next iteration spiritually of it in Starfield? But looking back at that video, A, it's incredible to see really how far I don't know that we often look at that at a back to back in one breath, watching the evolution of one game. I think it'd be interesting. It's interesting to think about if there's so much in this game now. And I know that, you guys, everyone's picked it back up again in different phases and put it back down again. I have as well. I played it when it came out, then put it to bed, then picked it back up again, then put it to bed. I was playing PlayStation 4, then I played it on PC. My fingers always have, I delete it to make room for another game. I will not delete it for too long of a time because I'm like, I'm going to go back in, and then something might, the hard drive just pushes the limits and I have to make room. But I'm always hovering on install. Now is now the time. Am I in the mood for that again?
It remains a favorite of mine on Steam. Even if it's not downloaded, it's still in my favorite. So it's always right. It's always right there.
I actually just recently discovered you can hide game, like some games like remain there, and I'm like, I want to not even look at it, you know, it's pulling me. But No Man's Sky as well for me. What I was wondering is how the three of us think we would feel if all of that game had come out on release. Would we have been overwhelmed by it? Would any of us had seen as much as it has had to offer? Has the game benefited from being released installments where we popped back in to try this version of it? Does it have the legs it has? Or, you know, we all are very much aware of, upon its release, being disappointed by it not being what it promised. And if it had all that, would we have not had that? It wouldn't have had all the mishigas about it, and we would have, you know, it wouldn't have received any criticism, perhaps. And then also, like, will it matter after Starfield, you know?
Man, those are all excellent questions. I, you know, just to catch people up, this video that was released is teasing, you know, it's ostensibly its job was to tease the next big update for No Man's Skies, which they're calling Echoes. But really all they showed was a little logo that said Echoes and kind of lingered with some interesting typography. But really what it was is exactly as Dan described. It's this incredible progression that is chronological of every single update that has happened to No Man's Sky in the 7 years since it has launched. My first question actually, Dan, is Does it feel like 7 years since No Man's Sky? Does it feel longer or shorter? What is it shorter. Like when you hear 7 years since No Man's Sky, does that seem right or does that seem wrong in one direction or another?
No, you know what's interesting? I think we, is this right or wrong? Did No Man's Sky not come out like very shortly after we finished TRS?
I mean, it must have. Well, we finished TRS more than 10 years ago because we've been doing this show for 10 years.
I just feel like my memory of it was being anxious about it and hearing the two of you guys. I can like picture the carpet I was looking at when I was listening to you guys. He goes in an airport or something talking about it. I could have sworn it was near an E3. I was like, oh, I didn't attend that thing. So now
It had a big E3 showing for Sony forever ago, and it was like it kind of blew the doors off of it. It was like a hyped release for them.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'm crossing the two memories, but does it feel like 7 years? Oh, I was going to say that like I may have said this to you before, but I feel like I was growing up and remembering every year of my life through doing the Totally Rad Show with you. And then I think also I met my wife around then. After TRS, everything feels that's modern. That's new.
Dude, I agree.
Before that, everything was like old and I was like forming who I am. And then after TRS, I just feel like that just came out. Whatever that.
I know.
The newborn movie. or whatever it is, like, which is now like whatever years. I'm like, no, that's still a new movie. Like, it's still like a new thing. So No Man's Sky is still like, it's in the new era of things. You know, it's not in the old era.
Wait till you hear what they did with Predator.
They made two new ones in this modern era, actually.
Forgive us for like you know crawling up our own behinds with this, but it like I've been talking about this on the Filmcast a lot too because I keep watching these documentaries about stuff that happened after we were done doing TRS, and it's exactly that feeling of like. This isn't long enough ago to make a documentary about it. It's totally. Just happened. Right. You know, there's that documentary about the Trivia HQ, you know, and I'm like, that just happened. That was like, anyway.
Yes. Just to say for people who have no idea, TRS, a podcast that Jeff and I did, which I think is a lot of people, which is great, you know, a podcast that Jeff and I did before him doing DLC, but I think the takeaway for people who aren't unaware of that is it's a thing that Jeff and I did in our, well, for me, it was my early 20s, in our 20s. So that's the relatable thing. It's like, I think that for everyone, we remember, like, you're becoming who you are through your 20s, you know, and then something happens. There's a cutoff in your, you know, brain when you become an old person and then you can't remember anything.
I think to put 7 years in perspective, totally in terms of my life also was around like moves and child, like I have like these cutoffs of like now this has happened, but I think 7 years, one, it's longer than most console generations, right? Like way people book into their time. And two, what I think is astonishing of this game continually getting better is Sopranos. That was a lifetime. Six seasons. Yeah. Breaking Bad, 5 seasons. Game of Thrones, 7. But like in terms of years, like think of these momentous journeys that we've gone on in time span shorter than this game has been out and continually improving. And also, Jeff, I think fascinating for No Man's Sky is it is not a games as service game, but yet it's probably given us more than any games as service game has given.
I would argue with that distinction just because they don't charge for any of those updates. I think it is a game. I mean, they've clearly been servicing this game as it continues.
Yes. I think technically 100% I agree with you, but I think in terms of how that term is used within the industry, it's not, you know, constantly selling you new things. It's just giving away.
That's what's extraordinary.
So much stuff.
It must be still selling enough copies to justify the work that's being done on it, which is extraordinary. And to directly address Dan's comments or questions is obviously they have 7 more years to work on this game. So any game you can work on for 7 years is going to be a lot better than it was 7 years before. So it's kind of unfair to say, well, if it had come out like this, it's like, yeah, well, if they'd been working on it for 7 years, it would have gotten a lot better. But I do think I mean, maybe not as it is now, but like halfway through those big updates, you know, a lot of the updates were delivering on stuff that I think people expected of the game, even if it was unfair to have those expectations. I think there was a lot of expectation of it being a Starfield-like, you know, being a giant role-playing game in the sky. And it really wasn't that when it launched. And it took a while for them to get content there, even though it had all this procedurally generated stuff, like having a there. And it really is now. And there's and seeing that video and seeing it all back to back, and like, now there's cars and there's this and there's that and all this cool features that they're just showing you in quick succession in that really awesome video, you really realize, wow, the evolution of the game is amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
And how much they've jam-packed into that initial idea. And I do think that if it had, I mean, in a magical world where they could have put out the game as it is now, you know, day one, I think it would have been gone down as one of the most incredible things ever delivered ever. You know, it's a shame that there's, you really don't ever have a second chance to make a first impression, because I do think that even though there are a lot of fans of No Man's Sky, clearly, I think it's not put up into that all-time pantheon of incredible game releases because I think of its initial reaction.
I guess the part of my question is in thinking about, and maybe this is just me, but I wonder if it's culture, where in all media, I feel my patterns changing, as in, we used to want the giant open world Ubisoft game. Give me the most, you guys have brought this up before in the show. Give me the most game. I want to explore the most game.
Right.
Oh my God, I can just pick one game and just play that game forever. And television. Oh my God. Give me all the seasons all at once.
I want.
And we've been inundated. It's funny how that happened at the same time, didn't it? With streaming services that have given me, you know, an insane amount of movie and television.
Yeah.
And then inside television, you've given me insane amount of episodes to watch of that one specific thing. And then, and games did the same thing at the same time, where they gave us the most amount of hours, the largest sized maps, all those things. And now I find myself in both instances, The Bear, 30 minute episodes. Yes, please. I'll watch all of that right now.
Right.
And in games, and I'll probably speak to some of it in what we've been playing. It's like, I find myself starting to itch for, I would love to, if I open up a game and it's got a million systems and I'm like, oh, I'm not in the mood right now. I want something, right. You know, that's why thinking about No Man's Sky in those terms, like, oh, it's been nice that I have had it in doses because I perhaps would open it. I'm afraid to say too much because I feel like then I'm gonna play Starfield and eat all my words, or maybe I'll be proven right. I don't know. Well, I can't wait to hear from you guys whether Starfield is all of what has No Man's Sky promised in one bite, or is it actually a different thing altogether? You know,
well, I am allowed to say that I have Starfield and have been playing Starfield. I'm not allowed to say anything other than that, but I will tell you that, like your question, I have been thinking a lot about No Man's Sky over the period of playing Starfield. And I think that there's going to be a lot of people that associate them, because it really, in a very similar tone of that sort of like exploration and that aspirational science fiction, rather than the sort of, you know, post-apocalyptic or sort of more depressing science fiction that we get a lot, Fallout series, for example. And I think that, you know, No Man's Sky, it's an amazing thing that it's still going strong at 7 years, and that video wasn't, we did 7 years, good night, everybody. It's like, no, there's more coming. We're still at it, you know?
Right.
It's extraordinary. And as you said, Christian, they're not charging for it. They're not charging more for it. You know, this game that is, we've all said, has been on our hard drives or potentially on our hard drives for 7 years, you can always just download again and keep trying the new stuff. That alone is extraordinary.
Yeah, I think we're 1 year away from the tweet going viral of, if Wonder Years was made today, he'd be playing No Man's Sky.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there data on the money or player count it has had? Like, just to run that against when Starfield comes or whatever, has it made more money? Because it, I guess not against Starfield, but other games of service, like, would it have made more money? Would it be taking in more money if it was charging for each expansion, or is it making this money?
Yeah, right. Is the
so much free content
re-dipping into people buying the original game? Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, because I think that's sort of like the Skyrim thing, where it's like they keep reselling Skyrim, you know, in various forms. I mean, I just quick Google said that No Man's Sky has sold over 10 million units since launch, so that's not shabby. That's not shabby at all. I don't know if you
could
ever do
a terrible game that sells expansions. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if those same people would have had to buy, you know, the original people would have had to buy those expansions if they would have made more money. Who knows? But I like the business model. I applaud the business model.
Certainly.
Yeah. All right. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week? But first, we need to thank our sponsor, AG1, the daily foundational nutrition supplement that supports whole body health. I'm telling you, my wife and I drink this every single morning. It's actually adorable. My wife will make me up my little AG1 beverage that I can drink down. We got these special straws that we love to drink it. They're metal and big around. Oh man, it's become part of our life. And I tell you, the reason that I do AG1 is because I am lazy and I will not have a bunch of supplements. I can't. I've tried to have all the different supplements and do all the different things. I need one thing that I can do that I'm going to drink in the morning that is easy, that I like how it tastes. I just need to have something in my life that I can do simply and easily, the little packet that I can travel with. I'm not going to have all these little bags of pills to take. I'm just not going to do that. But I will do and have done AG1. Christian, I know you tried AG1 as well. I'm not going to say you're lazy like me. Maybe you have a different reason for trying it.
I mean, one person's laziness is the way I would describe having a simple routine. So I'll say that. I'm not lazy at all, but I enjoy a simple routine and knowing that I have it there. It's on my island in my kitchen. I have it out, scoop, shake, drink. I also enjoy that it is a drink versus a hard swallow pill. I think it tastes good, so it's not like, time to take my medicine, spoonful of sugar helps the medicine. It's like, oh, time to start the day, scoop, pour, shake, drink, done, easy.
It has helped my gut health. My wife and I really believe in having better gut health. I feel like I have more energy during the day. It's just been a great part of my routine, as you said, daily routine, because I'm lazy. I'm lazy. But if you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. I love those travel packs. We've been bringing them with us everywhere we go. Go to drinkag1.com/DLC. That's drinkag1.com/DLC. Check it out.
So there's interesting stuff. As you mentioned, we are pre-Gamescom, and so that deluge has not happened yet. But I thought I'd do a co-story where Jeff is both right and wrong. How can you be both, Jeff? How can you be both right and wrong?
Well, I apologize, but we only have one bumper.
Jeff was right. Well, I guess that's the one we have to start with then. I can't go against the grain of the bumpers. Alan Wake 2, the perennial announces its release date first, and then every other game also announces its release date to also be on Alan Wake 2's release window moment. Alan Wake 2 has announced a delay, thereby Jeff being right, to late October. I believe it's October 27th. Which is still kind of in the middle of a bunch of other great looking games, but still close to Halloween, which I think is beneficial for Alan Wake 2 and what it's trying to do. But the other side of that coin, Jeff is wrong, is Assassin's Creed Mirage has been moved up. Also moved up. Still in October, but now to October 5th. They announced that it went gold, and they're feeling confident about it. And I get, again, there's Spider-Man in there. October is hairy.
I have the earlier dates for you, Christian. We have October 6th, Detective Pikachu Returns. October 10th.
I was like, that's neither of the games I meant at first. I was
No. I'm telling you the stuff that's around these games, right? <Got it. laughs> So that's October 6th. The next day now is going to, or that's the previous day was going to be Assassin's Creed Mirage. So now yeah. Assassin's Creed Mirage is October 5th. The 6th, Detective Pikachu Returns. The 10th, October 10th, Forza Motorsport. Then the 13th, which was going to be the day after Assassin's Creed Mirage before it moved, is the new Lords of the Fallen game, which getting some buzz.
Yeah.
Then you have October 20th, which is still Spider-Man 2 and Super Mario Brothers Wonder on the same day. Now,
incredible.
Those are the games that need to, one of them needs to move. Dudes, come on. One of you needs to move. That's just insane. But then you have October 24th is City Skylines 2. And the real bummer for the move of Alan Wake 2 to the 27th is October 25th. Is Alone in the Dark. So you get Alone in the Dark and Alan Wake 2 coming out within 2 days of each other, which for my money are kind of offering the same experience or on a very similar experiences. And that I think is going to be unfortunate for Alone in the Dark, in my opinion. Who knows? But I suspect maybe Alone in the Dark will blink. You don't know because you want, you know, you kind of want to be out there before Halloween.
You want spooky season. Yeah.
You want totally spooky spooks, but it is a.
Does that matter in games?
I think they're trying to capitalize on it, right?
Like you're in the mood for a scary game. So does it affect?
I would suspect that it affects at least streamers. You'll get a bunch more streamers streaming the new spooky game, which, right, you know, gets it out into the zeitgeist and gets people wanting to play it. So, you know, I suspect it does something.
The thing I was just thinking of along those lines is I wonder if the three of us and many are gamers who play lots of different, we like playing video games of many different genres, yeah, to which simultaneous and, you know, near release dates matter a great deal because it means that we won't have the time, there's too much to play, you know, right, we have to make decisions. But I wonder if games are, that's just, we are the minority, and games are actually more like movies, where it's like, no, this demographic is going to go buy Super Mario Bros. It's not a crossover. It's not going to be affected by Lords of the Fallen or whatever the other games that you said. You know what I mean? And so that's why, for all the years that we've complained and been frustrated about, why are they, isn't it taking, absorbing the same, we're just the minority of people that happen to play cross-genre, and monetarily, it's greatly helped to, you know.
I mean, I think there's some truth to that, in that it matters more to us than the average consumer. But I still think it forces a decision on the average consumer, because if you're talking about a finite discretionary budget that you might have, or, you know, a kid who's going to get two Christmas presents or whatever it is, you know, they get the holiday gift giving season, and you go, well, if this had come out in July and this had come out in November, you might be able to get both of those just because of how money works, you know? I think, but at this point, like, July is packed too, and there's just no non-packed season anymore for video games. They've just all packed. But I do think it forces decisions on consumers, and it forces decisions on coverage, and there are games that get overshadowed by other games, and I suspect that will happen to Alone in the Dark, for example. I think it will get overshadowed because you're going to be talking about, you know, Super Mario Brothers Wonder and Spider-Man 2 and all these other, and Alan Wake and all these other games. I mean, my poster child for this, and I think you agree, Dan, is Titanfall 2, right? Which, if you recall, came out between
Call of Duty and Battlefield
that year. It was like, like they bookended it, and it just got swallowed up. So yeah. I think there's precedent for it. And I can't imagine it doesn't. And we haven't even talked about how, like, October comes after September when we have all this insanity in September. You know, obviously, we just had Baldur's Gate 3, which is going crazy in sales, and Starfield. And also Mortal Kombat 1 is coming out, and Payday 3 is coming out at the end of September. It's like there is just this clumping together of so many major releases that I can understand, as your story of the week, Christian, this shuffling that's happening. It's very much like with movies, right? If the new big Marvel movie comes out, stakes their flag in the sand and says, we're going to be July 4th, everybody like shuffles around and tries to figure out how to make sense of it for themselves.
That's what I'm very curious about. Because we've seen in games and the crunch culture in games and games being delayed, hence the Jeff is right bumper. And so often making a game is often described as just chaos until it isn't. It's like, we're never going to finish this. This is never going to, oh, there it is. There's a game. We did it. Oh my God, get it out the door. And I think because of that aspect to it, this idea as games continue to grow and be huge things at launch for so many of these games, the idea of the 2 year prior announcement reveal trailer, I hate to keep saying Starfield on an episode where we won't be talking about Starfield, but like famously Starfield's, you know, this is our release date. It's a special release date for us as a company. And all of these games that have these, not Birds of Prey, Suicide Squad. It's like, this is our date. Just kidding. Bat with blood. Real date. Just kidding. Someone clean that bat. Get a new date. And it just seems so hard that I do think it could benefit from some of that shuffling that seems to happen more with the film industry, but I don't know if it can with games and how they come together and get made, which is why I think Assassin's Creed is, for my money, the more interesting of the two, where they're like, we're gold, it's good. You know, shit.
Move it up.
Get this baby out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one of those two, I think it was the Alan Wake 2, they explicitly said in their tweet announcing it that their quote was, October is an amazing month for game launches, and we hope this date shift gives more space for everyone to enjoy their favorite games. They're like, they're literally saying, hey, we're getting out of the way of some big hitters right here. And I wonder, you know, there's got to be somebody in a room somewhere going, we're good. We're still good. Lords of the Fallen. We're good. There's a lot of big stuff around, but all our polling data or whatever, our market analysis is telling us it's going to be good. I'm curious how that all works. It just seems very tenuous, in my opinion.
I think part of it is you're paying people to make the thing, and you need to stop people.
Right.
You've got to stop those payments.
Yeah.
If the game's gold, you're done paying those people, but now you're paying new people. You're paying marketing team.
Right.
But then also and it is all geared towards a release date. If you're changing it, it's like a turning a ship of some size, right? It's a slower turn. But then also, I guess, and I think this is the thing I've learned in movies that I'd never had perspective on prior to being involved in making them, is the company is just paid for something. They have to now return the investment in quarters, right? Like the way that businesses work. It's like, so if we don't now, we just put all this money
on an arcade machine where they want their returns in quarters.
Yeah, in quarters. So it's like, well, we don't release in October. There may be a reason why they have another game thing that's supposed to come out in December, November. They need to report to their shareholder, whatever it is. So it can't, some things can't move the way that we think, like, just you'll make more money if you're on another day, but they like have to report the earning in this, you know, section of the year. So, I imagine that this stuff's a part of the equation.
No doubt you are correct. I mean, it is certainly, you know, a bigger decision than simply like, you know, it'd be nice not to be around a new Super Mario Brothers game.
Yeah.
You know, it just feels like, man, woof. Woof.
I thought you just turned your old release date into now calling it special limited preview, and then you push your release date. Yeah, right. You just move further back in the starting grid a couple of weeks. It's easy to do. It's not hard. It's not hard at all.
Well, it's going to be intense over the next 2 months of this program are going to be intense, just of like trying to cover everything. I'm already feel like I'm drowning.
Finished Baldur's Gate though, right? A couple of run-throughs
definitely.
Already.
Breezed right through that 175 hour game. All right. Let me tell you about my story of the week. I think this is a fun one just because I want to hear you guys speculate on what this could possibly mean. We heard a tease this week from Bungie about a new project. We know about the fact that they're resurrecting Marathon, which was one of the original, one of the first Bungie IPs. But there are other projects that Bungie has been working on and that they've been teasing and that they've had job listings for. They have an incubation project where they incubate offbeat, interesting ideas and see where they go. And they've been hiring for some of those. And in fact, a new social media post about one of their incubation projects that they've talked about since back in 2020 is gearing up with more positions available. And they were very public about this. You know, sometimes gaming news sites will mine these job listings trying to figure out, you know, clues as to what these projects could be. This time, that was not the case. Bungie was just out there in front saying, hey, we have this new incubation project, and here's what it is. This is how they described it in their own social media post. It is a team-based action game inspired by several genres in a brand new science fantasy universe. It draws inspiration from fighting games, platformers, MOBAs, life sims, and frog-type games. Frog-type games. This is all, quote, wrapped up in a lighthearted comedic world. Now, I kind of love this because what is that? And I want to.
I've been on record on this show, and our listeners can say I'm a big frog type fan. Rogue type, yeah. Not so much frog type. I mean,
I like frog lights, really. Not full frog games, you know. Give me frog light. So I'm not as hardcore as like a full frog game, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I can Frogger, but like Frogger 2 is like a little too much. I'm not gonna.
Do you think there's any chance that it's either A, a typo?
It could be. It could very well be.
And the internet is, you know, we're all like, oh, it must mean something, you know? That's all I got, actually.
Or they're like,
Daniel,
it can't be real.
I choose to believe it is not a typo.
Yeah.
I choose
to believe. How do you get your job posting in front of as many people as possible? You put frog type in it and the internet shares it for you, you know?
Could it be a behind the scenes? I can't wait for you guys to ask Lana Bashinsky. Like, is that like, is it just an industry term that we don't know?
Frog types.
Yeah, it's Lana's code. Been working on frog types for
it's
years.
It's code.
Now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is it time to cancel them? Is this just a horrible slanderous word for French made games? And it's just an outdated term that no one's been like, hey guys, it's not cool to say that anymore.
It's a French special forces game. Yes.
Is there literally just meant to write frag type games? Like you're like,
oh, Jeffrey.
Perhaps.
Was frag type a game?
No, but okay. I mean, it's more of a game than frog type.
Yeah. I mean, we go to Frogger and I got nothing. Even if we were to indulge in this concept. Though there was a game, I could have sworn it was in television, maybe, where it was a frog on each side of the screen. I thought this was Frogger.
Yeah, and you were grabbing
flies. Yes,
flies. Yes. Totally played that. Yeah. That's a frog type game.
That's a frog type.
I would put Seaman in that mix. It's a total
Seaman
frog type.
Uh-huh.
You grow him into a little frog.
Isn't
a frog a version of like seal? Like,
yeah. That's what I thought too. Is like, are they talking about military, like a ghillie suit guy, dude?
Yeah.
Frog. Yeah, it's just more like a scuba. It's like a scuba. Yeah.
It's
going to be great.
I love how enigmatic this post is. I mean, because
also everything else you read, Jeff, is let's just put words.
Fighting games, platformers, MOBAs, life sims, and frog type games.
No, before it, the first thing.
Team based action game inspired by several games.
What's team based action
science fantasy universe?
And science fantasy.
It's both.
Which are things. I mean, I know, but to have that much in one And, you know, is kind of
intense. It would be more useful. Tell us what it's not.
I would love, and no sarcasm here, I would love to be on this incubation team. What freedom?
Yes.
Like, it sounds like it's like, hey, we want to make this killer game. We have some really cool ideas. Don't limit yourself, you know?
Yeah, but then Christian, you're in the room, you're pitching like some Flappy Bird stuff, and they're like, it's a frog type game, not a bird type game, pal.
Okay. I'm picturing you're like a shooter in space, and there's three classes, like a hunter, a sniper, and a frog, and I'm just spitballing.
It's science fantasy, though, so if you're in space, you'd be with, like, swords and
yes,
stuff.
Science fantasy. Yes, okay. Science you're fantasy. In your spaceship, and you get out, and you draw your broadsword. Yeah,
a broadsword, you have a fencer who's lighter on their feet, a frog.
By the way, just as you said that, I would totally play a game that's, like, the Guardians game, you know, that you're a guy with a broadsword in a spacesuit, and your little like Rocket Raccoon type buddy is a frog, that smart alecky frog. I'm into this game.
Right, this game's got power ups,
platforming. Yeah.
What if they just announced a reboot of Battletoads?
They did.
That's Microsoft owned, though. Yeah, so that's, we have a disconnect there. Yeah,
but there is. You know what? There actually is something. Let's see if I'm wrong about this, where I feel like the way in which what has been happening in video games in, I don't know if improving is the right way of saying it, but in reiterating and making games fresher has been in combining more and more genres. I don't think that's how it evolved to a certain point. I feel like we had... you know, better graphics was the evolution, maybe, you know, but now it seems like I really enjoyed the MMO New World, which is a combination of crafting game and real time combat, you know, action combat and MMO. It's like, I love that. Like, oh, I get my survival, you know, No Man's Sky is like, it's got survival, but it's also got space flight now. Right. Whereas Ark just had survival crafting and a little bit of crappy combat. Conan, better combat. It's like we're recombining all sorts of, we're smushing genres together. I don't remember that being the case, you know, when we were younger.
I think that's accurate. I think that the technology has allowed them to throw everything in the kitchen sink, and you know, it's like just
because
the open worldiness
kinds of systems.
Yeah, you make an open world game, and you walk into the corner. Now you're playing a turn-based card game in The Witcher. You know, it's like everything's in there, and I think that's cool. But the one thing that's not in there is frog type games.
I can't wait to find out.
This is so exciting. I know.
It's so exciting.
Yeah, this is clearly, I won Story of the Week this week, Christian. This is the best topic we could possibly come up with.
I thought I was done. I mean, you should see how many tabs I have open looking up Frogs. I didn't know this story was how silly it was. I thought it was just like, I was tuning in. I was like, oh, I'm going to find out what this also, because you say this a lot on the show. You say rogue light.
Yeah.
Instead of roguelike. Is that interchangeable or am I missing?
There is a distinction between the two. So, you know, the original game Rogue, right, you know, that it's all based on, was a very old PC game where you keep going further down into a dungeon, and if you die, you're dead, right? You how far can you get is a big sort of push your luck, risk reward thing is how far can you get, but once you die, you lose all your stuff, you're dead.
Right.
Roguelite means the penalties aren't as harsh. It's got those kinds of elements, but it is much more for gaming. You get to carry things over from run to run. There are ways to progress that you know, transcend the death state in the game. So that's the distinction. But
what's roguelike then?
Roguelike is like the game Rogue, where it's much more severe. It's much more permanent.
It's more punishing. You don't get to...
Yeah, it's not as there's not as much that carries over from run to run. Rogue is like, try it. You failed. Okay, but you got this far. Cool. Try again, dude. And in Rogue Lights.
Isn't that every Nintendo game?
Well, yes, but this was a specifically. Like, well, yeah, it's a lot of arcade games. Like, but Rogue was like, get more powerful. Go, you know, do a build up your character, get cool stuff, go deeper, go deeper, go deeper. How far can you go? But then you're dead, and you're done. I'm sure I'm going to get lots of emails. Are like,
I know exactly. I feel like I did that to you. Sorry, okay. I did want the answer. I guess I could have googled it. Sorry.
No, I'm sure I'm mostly wrong.
But you can email us kernel of truth. At frogtype@dlc.games.
All right. Let's talk about the games that we have. Because there's one thing you mentioned that I'm like, we have the perfect game to talk about in the playlist. But first, we're going to thank our sponsor, Factor. Oh, my gosh. I love Factor. My wife actually got me into eating Factor meals. She found it online. And I was skeptical. I'll be honest. I was skeptical. But again, recurring theme this week, I'm lazy. And I will often skip meals rather than cook something for myself. And that's not good. That's not good. I get so busy, especially this fall season. Kids are back to school. Things are chaotic. I want something that's going to be simple, that I can have as a meal. Usually lunch is when I have my Factor meals. And Factor is America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit. You can fuel up fast. You got these chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals. They're delivered straight to your door. It's so simple. I save time and I eat well. Plus, I have portion control, so I'm not overeating. I stay on track with a healthy lifestyle. My favorite thing about Factor, I got to tell you, above and beyond even the convenience and ease of use, is they taste good. These are really, really good. Sometimes I get skeptical. Anything you put in the microwave, I'm like, I don't know. These Factor meals, there's so many cool varieties. They have a lot of great chicken meals or great pasta meals. Christian, have you tried any of these Factor meals? I love them for lunches.
I mean, we can talk about the meals, and I really love, I'm a vegetarian, so it's great that there are great vegetarian options, but also, I'm all about those snacks, Jeff. You talked about being lazy. Factor has snacks, and my go-tos are the smoothies, and they are delicious, and they are there for me in between meals or when I maybe didn't eat a meal, even if it was there for me ready to go. And so those are the things that I will grab as I am rushing to pick up the kids or trying to squeeze something into an hour that doesn't exist for me. And so I love that there are meals that I can sit down and have, but then also snacks and things in between those meals that help keep me running.
These are fresh, never frozen meals that are ready in just 2 minutes. All you have to do is heat them up and enjoy them and then get back to, back to your busy, busy lives. There's over 34 weekly flavor packed dietitian approved meals all ready to eat in just 2 minutes. It's great. I love them. My wife loves them. You can try them yourself. Head to factormeals.com/DLC50 and use promo code DLC50 to get 50% off. I'm not great at math, but that seems like a lot. Like almost half. 50% off. That's code DLC50 at factormeals.com/DLC50 to get 50% off. Daniel Trachtenberg, you have a game on your playlist that is also on my playlist because you told me about it. And you have been a very good recommender of games that I have missed on Steam. And I've tried to attribute your recommendations every time you make them on the show, but I'm always so grateful to get a recommendation because you have my tastes dialed in. And I think this is another example of a game I'm glad you brought to my attention because I didn't know about it. It's called On Guard.
Okay. You said that, in a way that I thought you were going to play the like trailer for the game or something.
No,
so I was like,
I don't do that kind of preparation.
I was like, but he doesn't do that. here it is. Yeah. By the way, almost every game I've recommended to you, I've never actually played them. I'm very curious to play them, and I want to hear your take on it before I purchase it. So I say, Jeff, this game.
Jeff, you buy it. Let Mikey try it.
And thankfully, I didn't know you were gonna, you know, but I badgered you enough about, you know, so you convinced me to buy. Saying, well, it's only $18.
$18, yeah,
yeah. Because I was like, I was terribly afraid that it's going to be on Game Pass at some point. But I'm glad I bought it because it is really fun. I'll just say, because both games I've played recently are very similar and come from being in my ritualistic cycle of going from MMO to MMO to MMO. And this year, Diablo 4, which is, you know, not so different from a very zen leveling up languid experience with fits and starts of stress and combat, or whatever. But I started to feel, oh, you know what it was? And then I played Baldur's Gate 3 and was enjoying it. But it kind of, like, going from MMO to Baldur's Gate 3, I just, in my cycle of genres I want to play, I was like, I need a tight action experience.
Yeah, this is when you were talking in the news segment about how, you know, sometimes you get these games that have so many systems, you're like, I just want to do something simple and straightforward. I was like, well, that's On Guard, I feel.
That is On Guard, yeah. And prior to On Guard, I popped open Shadow of War because it's been in my Steam forever. I had never installed it. Never, you know, it was like one day. I was like, now's the time. Now I'm going to do it. And loved the combat. Loved. But I'm not going to review that game. It has issues. You guys can talk. I'm not, you know, talking about it. But I was like, I need something that gives me that Arkham style combat. And then I went to play Mad Max again. Same thing, you know? Yeah. And then On Guard. It's so funny how all these games, and the other game, I'm going to talk about Midnight Fight Express. It's the same. The buttons are all mapped to the same places, thankfully. It's like, they know. They learned. We like that.
Yeah.
And On Guard is a Zorro wish fulfillment simulator.
A Zorro type, the classic Zorro type.
It's a Zorro like. It's not a Zorro like. It's filled with the whimsy of Zorro or Puss in Boots, and
yeah,
in a very colorful art style. You are a female swashbuckling swordsman with that very specific. I forget what that kind of sword is called, but it's that sword. It is
rapier.
Not a broadsword. Rapier. Yes, it is not a claymore or a katana, whatever, yeah. That kind of sword. And you make witty, cutting remarks to your adversaries. And amidst the combat, there are platforming sections. And it's unlike Batman specifically, you're more involved with your environment. You are kicking crates and chairs into people and grabbing punch bowls and throwing it on them and kicking tables and jumping over tables and all that stuff. It's a lot of fun, and it's especially fun, and I assume you feel this way too, Jeff, of having that kind of experience we've had in so many other games, but in a world that is much more pleasant to be in,
mm-hmm.
That has a sense of whimsy and isn't dark and oppressive, but still has the tightness of combat.
100%. Yeah, I agree. I described it as like Sifu with a sense of humor. You know, that game, Sifu, I don't know if you ever played that, Dan, but...
I did. Well, that's what fueled Midnight Fight Express. I'm going to get into that. Yeah.
So this has a lot of Sifu vibes in that, basically, if you're familiar with Sifu, you know, you go into, you're moving through this environment and you can find things, contextual things that'll tell you bits of lore or, you know, story stuff, but that's very light. Mostly what you're doing is moving from place to place and you get into what is ostensibly an arena and then a bunch of bad guys come and you have to eliminate all the bad guys to move on. That's what you're doing in On Guard as well, except that you are sword fighting them. And I think the game does an extremely good job of recreating that cool cinematic sword fight that you want from a Three Musketeers movie or from The Princess Bride or from a great Zorro movie or, you know, like you said, Puss in Boots. I definitely got huge Puss in Boots vibes because my kids love Puss in Boots and I've watched it a bunch of times. So it has that, it really, I thought, was written with a very light touch, very fun, whimsical, as you said, And it's just a pleasant, fun place to be. You can pick up a pot from a table, throw it on a guy, it lands on his head, and he's doing the cartoon, like, whoa, what am I doing? And you can run over and attack him. You're hopping over tables, you're flipping off of things. And in contrast to a Batman Arkham game or a Spider-Man, you know, the Sony Spider-Man game, Insomniac right. Spider-Man games, where the sort of joy of those games is being able to take down, you know, dozens of bad guys all at once and sort of rhythmically bopping between them. I think the fun of On Guard is when you're fighting more than one person in On Guard, you're in trouble. Like it becomes more difficult to manage multiple people. And so the challenge is finding ways to use the environment or use your skills to deal with, like, you kick a crate at one of them, knocking him so you can concentrate on the other, which feels so much like a movie, you know, like those great swashbuckling movies where, you know, the hero has to, you know, cut the cord of the curtains so that falls on the bad guys so we can fight the other two. You're doing all that stuff and it really flows and you can improvise your way through it. And you're like, oh my gosh, two more guys are coming. Time to kick a table at them. And I don't know. It just really, it does one thing really, really well. And I love it for that. Like it's just really pleasurable to play.
I wrestled with that very thing that you're talking about, and there's a bit of an adjustment period because you expect it to function more like Spider-Man and Batman, where you are more deftly able to handle groups of enemies.
Yeah.
And what I love about the game is that it feels like it's encouraging you to create a cinematic, to choreograph the fight scene. You know,
yeah.
It's like, right. It'll be fun. The game really wants you to use the environment because it's very hard if you aren't moving that way.
Yeah.
So it wants you to deal with those two guys just to focus on this one guy. And if you get overwhelmed, you have to, you know, I missed two for too long in playing it. It's a weird thing in thinking about Spider-Man and Batman in that it's like there's a parry and a dodge that's always in these games. And when you're focusing on one person, I feel like the other people in the group in those games do the thing that stuntmen do, especially in older films and sometimes still in fight scenes where they're like waiting, giving the guy, they're not all piling in at the same time. But this game, it kind of all comes at you at once. If you don't do it, doesn't do the thing where like somehow like knows I'm still in my combo and it's being nice to me that I think those other games do. And I was a little bit frustrated by that until I realized I'm forcing a genre onto this game that it is not, you know, and I really need to respect what it's egging me on to do and embrace the like, be Errol Flynn, be Jackie Chan, like embrace the environment and have fun with it. But still it's very challenging. And the boss, you know, I only had one boss fight in playing it so far, but that was very hard and was the real lesson in realizing how to use the environment. I also will say that the platforming elements are very, it's very like, and here's some, there's something fun and it certainly gives variation, but I guess what I wish the game had a little bit more of is the last few Assassin's Creeds and Ghost of Tsushima, where it's not partitioned. This is traversal. This is not even arena and this is combat. Where it's all one and the same, so you can jump up here and jump down here and be awesome and then jump back in. And now it's platforming and combat at one time, and that's it. You know, like that.
Yeah.
That's what that would have filled me with so much joy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, it's great to get that tight combat, and those games come with them a whole lot of exploration and would make me go, maybe I'm not in the mood for this right now. Whereas this, I can pick up and get my adrenaline rush.
Yeah. It really is just a pleasurable game. And I agree with you that the platforming stuff there is very simplistic and it's not, there's not much challenge to it, but it's kind of cool to be, you know, flipping on bars and jumping over things. And there's a couple of times where I'm like, oh, that was a clever way to get me out of that room or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, it's very light. the thing that I'm most impressed with is how many animations they seem to have crammed in that are specialized to one specific thing, you know, like kicking, you can kick things, as we've said, but you can also kick people. And if you kick one down the stairs or something, it has a different animation than if you kick it, you know, across the room. Or there's times where you'll kick someone and they'll be right at the edge of a ledge and they'll try to balance and hang on to that cartoon, like arm wavy thing. And it's got, and there's different dodges depending on how you're still just pushing the same dodge button, but based on how the fight is going, there'll be a dodge that's very kind of cool, or just a full on jump back dodge or a lean dodge. And so it really does feel like a much more dynamic sword fight than, say, an Assassin's Creed, which still has, you know, a lot of animations, but doesn't ever feel to me like it really is this, you know, this tete-a-tete with two accomplished swordsmen, you know?
Well, the difference is in this game and the game I'll mention, and games like Assassin's Creed and Spider-Man and Batman, are those games, you're learning the moves to survive and to win and to finish and get through the battle. Whereas these games are more like create the scene.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Have fun. It's not, we have all these different animations that'll happen as you go. So it isn't just like BB or you know, Devil May Cry or that type of beat 'em up where it's like, it's all about the combo, it's about winning. It's not about making it cinematic.
Right.
You know,
and style.
And,
yeah.
And embracing the role play of it, sort of like the wish fulfillment.
I agree. So that's On Guard. It's a game that Dan and I both really like. It's on sale on Steam right now for $18. Just came out. I think this is one of those games that a lot of people are going to overlook in the mountain of huge releases, but it's just a delight. And I played it also on Steam Deck, and it didn't appear to be officially sanctioned by Valve on Steam Deck, but it worked just great and was fun to play on Steam Deck. So. On Guard. I think it was a real win. Okay, the other game you said you've been playing that's similar is Midnight Fight Express.
Yeah, I really wanted to mention this, not only because I happen to be, for the same reason I was playing it this week, but it's also a great pairing with On Guard. Have you guys brought it? Christian and I thought maybe you did talk about it. I was like, I think they never talked about it. And I was like, wait, maybe Christian had it.
I think Christian did before. Bring it up, yeah.
You did? Yeah.
Please continue.
You'll refresh my memory in a moment, but it is this. It's like you could describe it coming from either direction. You could say it's like Hotline Miami or whatever that genre is, but with martial arts instead of guns. Or you could say it's like Sifu except isometric, you know, or Batman, whatever. But it is just like On Guard in that the fun of it is about creating awesome choreography. And you have with you, of course, the dodge block, the dodge parry, and heavy attack, light attack of this genre. But you also have with it picking up objects, throwing objects, table. It has the same thing where a ton of awesome mo-capped animations that accompany when you get close. It has a system in it that reminded me of the game I loved. I think you may have liked, or it may have been the only one that we reviewed on TRS, the Bourne video game.
Oh my gosh,
It had a solid title that could have been in the movies.
An interesting fight mechanic where you'd go into things and it wasn't, I guess it was a QTE, but not quite a QTE because they tried to really replicate that pre-John Wick, Bourne style of like, no one gets a good whole punch in because they're so tight. It's like punch, grab, twist, turn, punch, push off a thing. Really
and
fun.
And using your environment. So when you were close to a pen, you'd grab the pen. When you're close to a filing cabinet, suddenly you'd use the filing cabinet. And so when you perform finishing moves in Midnight Fight Express, it incorporates the environment with the fight. Are you Googling right now to find out?
Yeah, the Bourne Conspiracy is what it was called.
Yeah. It's like that could have been the name of one of the movies or TV show.
It might have been one of the books.
Oh, was it actually?
It might have been, yeah. Because the video game is called Robert Ludlum's The Bourne Conspiracy.
Oh, right.
Which means they had the license from the Ludlum estate, not from the movies. Yeah.
But But yeah, it delivered it, and this has a little bit more forgiving of a block counter system that I enjoyed, and also has skill trees where you're leveling up skills. So this is kind of a very funneled version of everything that I love, and is a badass simulator, and is a little more forgiving in the timing of, I mean, obviously playing on a, you can play on a harder difficulty, but it is, but even in concept, it's like, it wants you to embrace the fun of taking on more people at once, as opposed to On Guard that is like, no, just fight this one person. But I found it more Sifu. I think something about this perspective, the isometric perspective that I thought you would appreciate, especially Jeff, made it, a little bit more, easier to accomplish what Sifu also sets out to do.
Yeah.
And the skill tree is a little more, concise and clear than that which is in Sifu. But, so yeah, I really enjoyed it, and it's a similar, it just left Game Pass, but I learned a bit because it's free on PS Plus.
Oh.
One of the PS Pluses. Awesome. But Christian, what did you think of it when you played it a year ago?
I was very hyped for it. The developer did a really awesome job, I think, sharing a lot of the animation status as they were making it. Mm. And it was the genre that I would call like a, you know, John Wick. Like trying to encapsulate that badass.
But if John Wick was a frog.
Right, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Like use your tongue to get the gun. The classic
guys,
John Wick.
That is not a better Hotline Miami type game where like, but your tongue like gets things and retrieves them. So
I think we all know that his name would be John Lick.
Yes.
But Midnight Fight Express for me wasn't quite tight enough in terms of the combat feeling as tight as I needed it to feel, which I think is maybe an unfair expectation that I brought into the game. But coming off of Sony Spider-Man and Miles Morales, and there was another one, maybe it was Sifu. There were like, I felt like I was feasting in this genre. And so I really like the top-down isometric perspective that Midnight Fight Express was bringing to it, but I feel like it didn't quite do enough to make me want to stick with it. Like there were fights where I felt like I should have won. I'm trying not to be like my ego. I'm good at these games, but like mm-hmm. I thought I had it under control, and then something would go awry that would just pull me out of it long enough to make me not want to reload and go back. But I think I love the aesthetic. I love all the custom animations in the game. It just didn't quite click with me, I think, because I was getting what you're craving right now from a few other games.
It's good that
I
had this distance. Although but that and On Guard is, yeah.
That's sure. Midnight Fight Express. You also have on here on your playlist a game that you texted me about that I have not tried yet.
Right. This is a secret. I'm not really going to talk about this game.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because I did play a little bit of it, but I'm throwing down the gauntlet to get what I want on air right now.
Right.
Because I'm not going to spend time in this game unless I hear the Jeff Cannata review. I play this game? I will say in the few little bit of time I did play, it's kind of cool. The name is terrible. It sounds like a DM like ran out of names to come up with. And you are Waven, the son of Craven.
Waven. Yeah, it's Waven. Waven is the name of the game.
It's another one where it's like you could describe it coming from either direction in terms of like it's an isometric tactical RPG thing. So which was night after playing a little bit of Baldur's Gate and sort of wanting a more contained board of stratagem. It's a lot like Into the Breach, and then it's like a square, and you have your character and your abilities, and there's the bad guys, and so it's like there's more chess to it. But there's also cards involved, so you could think of it like it's Slay the Spire or one of those likes.
Yeah.
But you see your characters on a board, you can move, like you could sort of think of it in either way, or even a Hearthstone, whatever, because the cards create abilities, and you have a certain amount of pips that you can use said cards, and you create your deck and then use it. Like it's all the things
I like
very much like,
yeah,
while being I haven't fully embraced all the game systems, and it definitely is a game where I was like, oh boy, there's a lot of systems here. But it's definitely set up to be mobile. I don't know if it's mobile yet.
That's what scares me is that it's free to play. I saw that it was free to play. I was like,
from all the reviews I read, the reason why it was like, it's not pay to win.
Yeah.
It's good to you're good here. This is good.
Okay.
It's Steam reviews. I don't, you know, but it's a lot of fun. And, you know, you have your minions like Pokemon that fight for you. The music is quite pleasant. It's anime art style. You may like or not like that. I know sometimes you don't like it, but actually this is, you know, there's something very pleasant about this. And there's like an MMO-ish quality. Anyway, it's a lot of things mashed together. I think it could be pretty special. It's very well reviewed. Sometimes the games like this are very much not well reviewed.
Yeah.
That kind of triggered something in me.
It's Waven. I will check out Waven. Before we move on to Christian's, I do, just because you're here, I want to ask you what your thoughts are on Baldur's Gate 3, because I don't think you and I have even really talked in private about it. And, you know, Dan Trachtenberg and I met playing Dungeons & Dragons. So, you know, Dungeons & Dragons, big part of our lives and our friendship. What did you think of Baldur's Gate 3? It sounds like you bounced off of it a bit.
I did. I haven't played that much. I think just because I was like, I was interested to have a more tactical experience, but I think I was overwhelmed. And I made a monk, and I wasn't quite seeing the benefit of it when I was playing, and I got nervous. I made the wrong, you know, and I was like, oh, I got, you know, but I'm sure I just feel like I need to watch more video. I need to watch more, like, this is how to play my, and I'll like, oh, okay. And I'd be stoked to get more into it.
Well, I also have to say, since you said that, I erroneously said 2 weeks ago that there was no way to respec your character or change your class, when literally there's a person in your camp that will do that for you. So, had that conversation with that character at the time that I said it. But there is a way to change the class of your character very easily in Baldur's Gate 3. So everybody,
can you also remain the same class? Can you remain the same class but go back in your like?
I think so. I think you can just completely like change whatever you want. This character, it costs gold, so it's not free. But
interesting,
yeah.
I mean, but it is great. And the storytelling's awesome. The performances are awesome. And the graphic, I mean, really, it's like, I love how it looks.
Yeah, me too.
It's hard playing that in Diablo, and I ended up playing so much Diablo 4, it's insane. Even though I like hate played it forever until like finally I'm really enjoying it. And I played so many other games like it, and it's like, oh, but I love the art. Can I have more of this quality in gorgeous 4K HDR buttery on, you know, and Baldur's Gate, so gorgeous. I love the dice because it's so similar to the other Larian game, Divinity.
Yeah.
But having that dice thing in it gives you that the pleasure that D&D that board games do, where it's like, am I, you know, the luck that gambling, you know, fix. So I like it. I don't know that I played it enough to comment any deeper.
And Christian, back when we talked about it the first time too, you had said what changed from 3 years ago. That was one of the things I neglected to mention was, if you recall when I first talked about it, I was like, they have to fix the dice rolling. They have to fix the dice rolling. Because when the early access first came out, you would roll the die and it wouldn't tell you all your modifiers. It would just like tell you whether you won or, you know, failed or succeeded. Mm. And I'm like, no. The joy is in like, oh, I got a 7, but I need a 10. Oh, plus 2, plus 1. Yeah, I did it. And the game had totally nails that now, you know. And I don't know how long it took them between the first iteration and now, because I stopped playing it for literally 3 years. But when it first launched, when it first went into early access, they didn't do that right at all. And now, like you said, Dan, it is so satisfying to roll a dice and see your modifiers like slam and infect the number. You know, it's really cool. All right, Christian Spicer, what is on your playlist?
So there is something that's not Starfield. I know people could say they're playing Starfield. I am not playing Starfield. There is another game that I've been putting a lot of time into, but embargoes in this show don't quite hit right. So I might put up a blog post about it this week. If not, I will certainly talk about it next week. I can't right now. The other game that I've also been putting a lot of time in that I think is very interesting in terms of our No Man's Sky discussion that we just had earlier, and also for Baldur's Gate 3, I was given access to the early access for Wayfinder, which is by Airship Syndicate. I was thinking, I have Star in my head. Airship Syndicate, who made Darksiders Genesis, which is a game I absolutely adore. It was one of my five favorite. It came out, and a bunch of other genres as well. They certainly are not limited to one thing. And this is an action online RPG game that has a visual appeal more of Darksiders Genesis in terms of the scope of the game. And it is very much an action RPG where you are doing things in real time, and you pick your, you have a, you know, more stabby hero, a more tanky hero, a more shooty hero, a more healy hero. And it's meant to be this big online game. And it's hard for me to fully assess this game right now because most of my playtime with it, I probably put 2 hours in of honest to goodness playtime. So I don't want to like really dive into the nuts and bolts of the game itself because I don't think I've experienced enough of them for what this game is trying to be in terms of playing with other people and seeing as how if I'm playing with randoms or with a party and what is that collaboration like and what's a big event like, all the stuff that I think this game is smartly building toward. But it feels early in that I've probably spent 7 hours in queues.
Yeah, that's rough.
That didn't end. And there were times where I would just have my queue running on this screen and be playing a game on my console on my other, like I have a two, you know, monitor setup here. And I would peek over from time to time. And the developers have been very transparent about it, it seems. I don't think they're lying, but they've been talking about what's happening and having some issues, and they think it's better now and people can get in, and they've been, you know, apologetic. And I certainly don't think this was their plan for how this game would be first experienced. And then I've had a couple of pretty bummer disconnects where I'm doing the fun, you know, I'm in the nitty gritty, I'm playing as Silo, which is kind of I have a gun and grenades and really cool character type. And this game channels, I think, a lot of Darksiders Genesis in terms of, you know, a cartoony, but lived in world, if that makes sense. But also it seems to hearken some Overwatch in terms of the color, and the animations are a little extra, which is fun. You know, it's like they're big, and when you're running, my grenades are like bouncing, you know, you can see all of that. And this really cool, vibrant world that is a new IP bringing so much, I don't know if it's lore or story yet. We'll see where it ends up in terms of how it pays things off, or it's just building the world. But like this world that seems lived in and real and that you can play with friends. But my real question is whether or not it can survive this early access style launch. And I hope so, because Baldur's Gate, you know, Jeff, you talked about how things were rough around the edges when Baldur's Gate 3, when that came out, and you were having fun with it and you were going to keep playing. And then you found out your save wouldn't carry over. So you kind of put it away for a bit. But as we talked about for No Man's Sky, that game came out to not middling reviews, but not what was expected. And while it soldiered on, it certainly isn't revered in the way it otherwise would have been. And I don't know if Wayfinder has the stickiness to come back, or what it ends up being when things are stable. So I will say I've really enjoyed my time with it, but there hasn't been enough time with it for me to say, go get the Founders Pack, you know, get in early. This is going to be your next forever game or your party game. And right now it's, I think, another reminder that launching big online games is tough. And it's kind of been a bummer of an experience for me, because there have been a lot of times I've wanted to play it and have been, you know, physically unable to play it, to get into the game, and then have disconnect. So it's hard to recommend right now. I know it's only early access, but I think it's a, you know, put it on your Pinterest and sticky it and keep an eye on it. Cause I think it's trying to do a lot right. And from a studio I love, it just hasn't had the launch that I would have hoped it would have.
Yeah. I've been very anxious to try this one. This has been on my radar for a while. I love Airship Syndicate, and I believe they can pull this off. But I tried to get into it once. I logged on and I was told that I was 12,555th in line.
That's
get
pretty
in.
Good from what I've seen.
Yeah. And then I sat there for a second and it was like, you know, and then it clicked to like 12,457. And I was like, oh, that's
you're like, maybe it'll just go down to two in a second.
Yeah. Maybe it's going to really gonna speed along. And then
no,
it's like,
really
oh.
Number by number here.
For a time, it was the opposite. It would take you to five or two or one and the devs, and they fixed that one, but it would hang at like you're next. And so you'd be like, oh, yeah, buddy, here we go. And then it would never.
It's hard. I mean, obviously, this is early access. So you're not going to hold this against the game because it's early access. That's what early access is about, finding the demand, figuring it all out. But I'm very curious to try the game. And, you know, that's a tough thing. You know, it's hard to deal with kind of queues like that. But, you know, I believe in this developer and I hope that they can, you know, weather that, as you said.
They did Battle Chaser Nightwar too.
Jeff, yeah, I love that game. Yeah.
Same art style.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth underlining in comparison to No Man's Sky that it is early access. And it's also, I don't know, I don't fully understand video game business, but digital streams, the people who made Warframe, who I'm close to and worked on, in directing the cinematic, not the game, but they are publishers of it or something, or I don't know how, what is
oh,
it?
Oh, really?
They,
I don't know.
Release it or something. And Warframe, it's the very same stuff that one of the reasons I'm so excited to play it is that it feels like it's, as opposed to the science fantasy of Warframe, it is the fantasy looter, looter shooter. You know, I love this genre so much and in an art style that is exciting. It seems like very colorful and exciting to pleasant to be in.
Yeah.
But Warframe, when it came out, you know, also
same thing. Launch. You know? Yep.
I think that's a great point. If they give them the leash, you know, and the resources to improve this, I think it could really be something because I'm playing, I think it's on PlayStation 5, maybe PlayStation 4 as well, but I'm playing on PC with my beefy GP and it is gorgeous. It is definitely that cartoony aesthetic, but it is crisp and clean and the animations are cool. And I love real-time combat. You know, it seems to be scratching all the itches where it's like, oh, is this baby's first MMO? Are they tricking me? Am I playing an MMO? So I think there's a lot to like here. And I would definitely, for folks who had it on their radar, I know you're probably hearing some other early negative impressions because disconnects are very frustrating. But I would say keep it on your radar and hopefully they iron it out. Yeah,
that's Wayfinder. It's what it's on Christian's playlist. My playlist, you already heard about On Guard, still playing Baldur's Gate 3. You know, I have Starfield, so it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard for me to play anything else at this point. But I did put some time into a game that I mentioned when they had a demo. I think it was a Steam Next Fest demo that I went gaga over. I just loved it. It's a game called Hammerwatch 2. It has now been released fully as a game on Steam. I think it is coming to consoles at some point. I'm not sure when, but it is out on PC now. Hammerwatch 2. This is a really lovely pixel art, top-down isometric action role-playing game. Very much reminiscent of the old games that I cherished from my youth, Ultima, Might and Magic and some of those old school RPGs. It's very, very much a throwback to those, but also kind of has some Gauntlet vibes to the old arcade game Gauntlet. You can play multiplayer. I have not experienced that, but there's multi-classes, different classes you can play as, and it is this big, vibrant, vast world. I mean, the demo hinted at it, but man, the full game really drives home. This is a big world that is just full of wonderful
just
little
what
things
you need right now.
I know, right? It's too many big worlds. I can't, dude. You know, you go for months and months and months going, oh, I'd love to just dig into an RPG, and then all the RPGs come out at the same time. Like Sea of Stars is coming out next week, and all these even smaller RPGs that I've been excited about. It's like it's going to be swamped in RPG. Broken Roads was another one I'm excited about, but it's like Starfield and Baldur's Gate. It's just, you know, it's abundance of riches and I shouldn't complain, but I wish it was spaced out more so I could dig into each of these and give them all their own time. Anyway,
did you play the first Hammerwatch?
I did not. And in between the first Hammerwatch and this one, there was another game called something of Hammerwatch that was
Heroes of Hammerwatch.
Yeah, that's right. There was a roguelite version set in the same universe that people loved. I didn't play that either, but I really loved the demo of this, and I got super excited because it just looks like Ultimate. It feels like those old games, and it's this giant world, and you're picking up quests and you're doing things, but you've got that arcadey combat where you're smacking things and shooting arrows and casting spells, and you know, little guys are running after you and throwing things at you, and it was just a blast playing the demo. I think I very much like the final game as well. However, the final game reveals some flaws that are annoying and I suspect will be patched out, but are frustrating that persisted into a full release of this game. Notably, the controller support is really strange. This is a game that you should play on a controller, I think, but it's like an afterthought. I find myself sitting at my computer playing mostly with a controller, but I have to also use my mouse to do things.
Have you tried just playing with mouse and keyboard?
I don't like that, Dan. I don't, you know me, I'm left-handed and if I can play on a controller, I prefer, and especially this game. It's like arcadey, running around, real-time combat, shooting things, twin sticks. It's twin stick shooter, basically. It's like, you know, you rotate like Akari Warriors or whatever, you know, you're just twin stick. So I want to be playing it, but navigating any menus, I reach for my mouse because it doesn't play nice with the controller. Things are mapped weird. Casting, even your quick cast stuff, which you're going to need in the heat of the moment, is mapped weird and there's no way to change it. And I'll accidentally pull up the menu of quick things when there's like dudes all around me and they don't stop. It doesn't pause the game when it pulls that up. So I'm getting attacked. I'm like, it's on my screen. No. It's just very clunky with the controller. And I really hope they fix that. Also, the game has a day-night cycle, which is cool, but the day-night cycle is weird because there's been a few times where I come back to town and everybody's asleep, and so you can't do anything because you're like, I want to turn in my quests and talk to my people and like sell stuff, and it's like, no, everybody's asleep. It's like,
Good for them. Work-life balance, Jeff. Work-life balance.
I'm banging on doors like, wake up! I want to sell you a sword I found. But also you can, it doesn't ever tell you, there's no way to advance time. You just have to like either wait or buy a bed at an inn. And I'm like, I don't want to spend my precious gold to just make time go by in the game. You know, it doesn't have the thing you get in all the Elder Scrolls game where you're like, you know, go ahead 6 hours or whatever. But then even if you are buying time at an inn to sleep, there are certain quests that they don't tell you, but do have a time limit. So you can literally like sleep through your turn in. And the guy will be like, oh, and I'm no longer accepting that quest. Hey, and you're just like, what?
Been there, done that. You know, we've all done that. You run to class, you're carrying your assignment.
Anyway, so it's sort of old school like that. But I have a lot of affection for this game. I think it is really, really cool. It's just a bummer. If this had come out in like March, I would have put so many hours into this game. I would be all over this game. And, you know, now it's just, it is a really fun, different kind of RPG, throwback, old school kind of RPG amidst a bunch of really stellar AAA RPGs that are coming out that I want to put time into. So it is getting marginalized for me, and I think it's a bummer. I wish it had come out at a different time. But maybe I'll keep it, you know, I'll keep it on the Steam list, and maybe when time opens up, I'll return to Hammerwatch 2, which I think is a very, very cool game.
Can you tell me about, maybe it's an unfair comparison to ask for, but compared to Diablo, like, are there skill trees? Are you
getting new abilities? Are you
leveling them up?
Okay, really cool leveling on all the different classes, and you can really specialize and like make awesome builds for your characters. Like, yeah, that is one place that Hammerwatch 2 excels. Is like all of the character customization stuff. Okay. It's awesome.
All right.
And the quests are fun. Like the thing that's wild is how big the game is. It's, you'll go into, you know, what is like very early on in the game. I won't spoil anything later, but the very early on in the game, there's like a pirate cave and you get a quest like go kill the pirates. And in most games, you walk into the pirate cave and it'll be like, you know, a cave and there'll be pirates in it. This is this massive underground compound of pirate, like, it's massive. It's just, it goes, there's all kinds of different huge areas and tunnels that go off into other areas and places that interconnect. And it's like this, these pirates were living large in here.
Yeah, good for those pirates, right?
Yeah. But it's like every part of the game is like that. It's just everything is, and there's tons of little secrets and parts of the wall that you can break off and, you know, find something hidden there and a switch that you'll find. It's got a lot of love in it, it feels. And I really adore the pixel art of it. As a pixel art game, it actually supports my super ultra wide resolution, which a lot of pixel art games don't. And it just looks so pretty, like expanded out on the sides like that. So I really like Hammerwatch 2, but it does have a few annoyances that maybe will get patched out by the time I return to it. That's going to be our episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Dan Trachtenberg, it's awesome. Thank you for being here. I really appreciate you hanging out with us and talking games. Thanks, man.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
Pleasure is mine.
Tell folks anything you might want to plug, how they can watch Prey or whatever you'd like to talk about.
Well, we just announced, and this is why you had me on,
yes,
right?
The timing, of course.
The announcement.
Yes, the big announcement that we both know about.
The big announcement.
I'll let you say, because you're the guy, but we both know what it is.
Yeah. Prey is being released on physical media because so many people asked for it.
That's awesome.
The inundation on Twitter, I was able to forward all the info to the head of, and the head of 20th Century Studios happens to be a massive geek like us and loves physical media. And so it made it happen.
That's great.
Not really, I don't know that it has happened before. Maybe it has for a streaming film, but this is not an everyday occurrence. This is really special and awesome. And
unfortunately, it's only VHS, but it is physical.
Yeah, that's cool, right? Digibay? It's on 3/4 inch. But it's on HD DVD and Blu-ray. It's on Blu-ray and it's 4K Blu-ray and DVD. And there's like 2 hours. We did a commentary, me and Amber and
awesome
DP. I mean, crew and cast commentary behind the scenes. Some deleted scenes that were in the film, like a previs for an action sequence that we cut out of the movie. But you can see the like early rough animatic for it.
So cool.
And that comes out, I believe, October 3rd for spooky season.
Spooky season.
Right before Assassin's Creed. Hell yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Pairs nicely with Mirage.
The release date might move, you know, just to make, no, I don't know.
It won't. Very cool.
And there's a steelbook for it.
It's beautiful.
Best Buy, that's like really cool art. Yeah, and it's different arts on different versions of the disc. So, yeah.
If there's any chance that you are listening to this program and you have not watched Prey, you can watch it right now on Hulu, and it's phenomenal. It is incredible. Incredible movie. Correct that immediately. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Telling people not to get the physical version of Eat, Pray, Love. It's a different type of Prey. it is also available. Beautiful steelbook that you could go and get. This show is on Threads. I know there's been some X talk on this episode. This show is on Threads, if you want to follow that. DLC Hype Train is where you can find that. We had our first contest, Jeff. I don't know if you knew that.
Was it a feel-good motivational speaking contest?
Well, we did have, we talked about on paid DLC on Wednesday's show about the number of feel-good posts that the algorithm serves the thing. So we did post our first feel-good.
Yeah, it made me feel good.
Thread, good, great, awesome. That was what we did. Wait till we start posting the thirst traps. Are going to be coming.
Oh,
you've never been thirstier than when you see what Jeff and I look like after a 4-hour gaming sesh. You know what I mean? We're gonna we'll send you pictures of our chair post gaming sesh. It's gonna be intense. You're gonna want to see those. So that's DLC Hype Train on Threads is where people can find that. The main thing
promises
I want to say,
made by Christian or unnatural promises.
Hey, this was our contest.
Oh, okay.
What is Sarah's favorite game? Winner gets the answer correct.
Who's Sarah?
That's a good Great, right?
Exactly.
It's a good content. Right. Good contest.
I'm going to guess frog types. But,
you know. All right, play
Sarah
the music.
Loves
show's
frog
over.
Types.
We did it. Show's over. The main thing I want to say is that's not happening this week. Is feeling this. We were on a perfect pace, and then travel and storms and work got in the way. So we two more episodes for season two are coming. They don't have a release date as of yet, but they will be out soon. So I apologize to folks for having those not happen. Alex and I had really grand, ambitious plans for the last two. And apparently hurricanes and earthquakes and work and travel got in the way. So hopefully the two episodes will happen and then we'll see what happens in between. But apologies for the feeling this delay.
Still lots of great feeling this episodes, though. So if you're thinking about becoming a patron, you got all of season one, most of season two. All great stuff waiting for you at any level of Patreon support. And then the paid DLC program, of course, for the Cool Ranch level. For me, you can follow me still on the various places at Jeff Cannata. I also have other shows, including the Film Cast, talking about movies and TV shows. I have a sports show called The Fan Controlled Show. And We Have Concerns, which is a comedy science show, all of which can be found wherever you get podcasts. Also, the DLC Book Club. If you're a patron, you get the audio podcast version exclusive to you. But if you want to watch the video version, it's on YouTube and on my YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/Cannata Jeff. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Dan, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do, guys. I can't recall your affections for avocado toast. I don't know if it's there.
I love avocado toast.
You may have seen this already. You may have already be aware of this. You may have there a thing came across my Instagram, and I asked my wife to make it for me, and it was delicious, and it. It looks like it's avocado bread, toasted avocado on top with like a mound of like cheese on top, which I actually would argue that's maybe what it should be. That also sounds very good.
I'd say that sounds pretty great.
But yeah. So that could be the running. But what it actually is a hard boiled egg in a shredder, shredded on top of the avocado, warm, season it how you want to. Guys, it's awesome. Delicious, healthy, awesome. Hard-boiled egg in a cheese shredder. So it shreds on top, the whole darn thing you get on your avocado. You bite into it. It's great.
Did you, when I was
and
a little kid.
And then you eat it and then swallow it. It's awesome.
wait. What, and then what? No, when I was a kid.
Do I chew it, Dan? Do I chew it? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, chew it. Oh my gosh, you said you chew it.
I'm trying to swallow it and it's too big. Dan, it's. Led me wrong. when I was a kid, my mom had this thing. I don't know if they still make them because I feel like it was from a long time ago, but maybe they still do. But it was this thing that she would put an egg in and it looked like a guitar and it had
oh, yes.
Yes.
And you'd go
yes.
Bring, bring.
Slicing it.
Yeah. And you'd yes. Just press it down and it would slice it into slices. Do they still have those? Yeah,
I wonder. That's a great question.
Because I feel like that's when you said – grated. I didn't think of a cheese grater. I thought of that thing. I thought of
no. The, it's that's what I mean. That would have been like, yeah, I get it. Sliced egg gonna no, yeah. No. It's cooler than that because it's all. It's telling you, it looks like mozzarella cheese is on top, but it's healthy egg, but delicious.
I feel like that's a real skill. I feel like trying to cheese grate a hard boiled egg would just crumble it.
Well, it's like holding a block of cheese. I don't know. If she does. Right. I don't
okay,
know.
Your wife is amazing.
Could I also say. Still add cheese on top though? Because I think I'd
yeah,
also.
Yeah, I know. But wait, if you mix them, so it would be the same texture. But it's actually a combination of, I mean, that's pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
All right. Christian Spicer, top that. How are you going to, what is your, that's not a competition.
Easy. Here's how I top it with a.
Jeff, what if we broke into our rendition of top that?
As soon as it came out of my mouth, I was like, oh, I've.
You can't do that.
I made a terrible mistake. All right, Christian Spicer.
No, no, no. Please continue. The internet wants what the internet wants.
Dan still remembers it from friggin'.
Well, no, it was just forwarded. It was just posted to our Twitter, and I watched it. And Luna watched it and was very scared. She was so scared of why I was acting so weirdly.
You know, I probably shouldn't say this on the air. I can cut this out if you want me to. But you just said your daughter's name. And there's a game that we can't talk about yet. But the two main characters of the game are my son's name and your daughter's name.
Oh, interesting.
It's so funny to me. Anyway.
Oh, wow. Wish fulfillment.
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad that you gave the internet their late night thirst trap that I can now have on Threads of Top That, which there is the sexiest game ever played on the internet. My parting gift is the Descendants core film trilogy on Disney Plus. So they've made three. There's rumors of a fourth.
Oh, my God. Christian, because you're Christian, I thought this was like they came out with a new album.
Oh, the Descendants.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I was like, what? That you just blew my mind.
I thought for sure it was some pop punk thing, but yeah.
Yes.
Which any other week it would be. Also, that's a standing, both for t-shirts and for albums. Go get the Descendants. They're great. My kids are super into them right now. The films, the Disney movies. And these are Disney Channel movies that are now, you know, consumed mostly on Disney Plus. And they are absurd and of an era of these, you know, these made for TV Disney movies that were like the costumes. It's like, it looks like a costume. It looks like a cosplayer, you know, like there's that expense. There's no expense spared. And then there's spare some expense. And these are spare some expense, but played so earnestly for what they are. It's very much in the vein of like High School Musical or...
Well, it's the same director and, you know,
yes.
And
the basic premise is, you know, all the Disney characters live at the same time. So it's like Ursula's kid, I guess that's Descendants 2, spoiler.
Oh.
Cruella DeVille's kid, Maleficent's live action. Kid. It's live action. And then the good kid, like Beauty and the Beast's kid, is like the, you know, the prom king of the high school. And they let these kids from the bad island where the villains have all been sequestered over to try to, you know, make the world a better place. And I think for people that are maybe our age now that were a little too old to watch these when they first came out on Disney Channel, that maybe now have kids and they're looking for fun, just kind of like we talked about for On Guard, right? Like it wears its heart on its sleeve in such a wonderful way and is silly purposefully and just joyful and bright and just a good time. I think I have such fondness for some of these Disney originals that when I was a kid, and then I missed these as I got older. And I'm so glad they exist currently on streaming and aren't one of these things that have been, you know, disappeared from libraries. So if you have kids that are kind of that late elementary or maybe even early middle, and you haven't done the Descendants movies, musicals, one, some banger songs on there that are very much like of the era they came out. I'm like, what is this?
Oh, are they that old?
Three is 2019.
Okay. That's not that. Is that? Oh my God.
Well, it's new to you. It's post TRS.
So. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. Luna likes the music. She's afraid of watching it, but loves the idea of it, and even went as Halloween as it, just, even though she never saw, she was dressed as one of the characters.
Yeah,
but I love the first High School Musical.
Yes,
with the deepest of affection, and a part of that equation is the guy who directed Newsies, and he was Michael Jackson's choreographer. You know, there's other Disney Channel original things that are
Pup and Suds, you know, all day.
Yeah. But there's something to the catch, the pull of the High School Musical, and that was then infused, I think, in these Descendants movies with a better premise. And then I think the latest version is the Zombies movies. Yeah, right.
Which so we haven't done. That's where my kids are a little afraid. It's like, I'm like, you'll love it. And they're like, but it's zombies, and I'm like,
but they sing.
But yeah, but it's not. And yeah, High School Musical. Yeah. Is great, but it is like it's a very, you know, it's like this basketball player wants to sing. It's now we're doing like a film cast on High School Musical. It's such a silly premise from the get go that like Jafar's son and Cruella DeVille's kid are like of the same age, but it just works. You just kind of let it all go, And it is.
It's you let so it go, catchy. Let it go.
Hey, one more bar and we can't release this episode. It's too expensive. But check it out with kids, young kids. I think you'll have the song stuck in your head in a good way. And it's just fun. It's just fun. The Descendants films. And then if you're angry later, listen to the Descendants, the punk band.
I've never heard of these. It's the first time I never heard of it. So now I guess I got to introduce it to my kids. my parting gift, a lot of folks sent this to me, and I was really happy to see it. If you have been listening to me talk about the DLC book club that Lana Bashinsky and I are doing together, you know that we have embarked on a quest to read the Malazan Books of the Fallen, which is a 10-book series by Steven Erikson, which also has a bunch of ancillary books. There's a prequel trilogy. There's other books by Ian C. Esselmont, his co-creator, who did his own trilogies. And there's a bunch of books in this world of Malazan, and they're amazing. And Lana and I have been having so much fun talking about these books on the book club. Well, the good news is, my parting gift is that you can get all of the Malazan books that Steven Erikson has written, not just the 10, but the 10 and his prequel trilogy and a bunch of novellas and short stories he wrote in the world as part of the new Humble Bundle. The Humble Bundle does video games, but they also do books. There is a Malazan Humble Bundle. Humble Bundle, if you don't know, is a charity organization, helps raise money for various charities. You can pay what you will. It is a donation. And in exchange, you will get all of the Malazan books in EPUB format. There's been a bunch of people asking in our Discord whether EPUB is compatible with Kindle. It is super easy to do. I think Kindle has its own, you can email yourself an EPUB and it'll automatically populate. Or you can use a free program called Caliber, which does it. It's an awesome front end that makes it so simple. Anyway, it's just a great way to get these books, which I hold in the highest regard. I think these are some of the most incredibly written fantasy novels of all time. Everyone should know them. And you will support a good cause and you will pay what you will. So it is just, it's a win. Check out the Malazan Humble Bundle. All you got to do is go to humblebundle.com and then click on books and you'll see it. It's right there at the top, the newest one, Tor's Malazan Humble Bundle. Okay, we also got a listener suggested parting gift. This one made me laugh. It comes to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com from Matthias from the island of Ramsö in Sweden. I'm sure I mispronounced all of that, even island. And here we go. Matthias says, okay, enough is enough. I've been listening for years now to Jeff calling a smorgasbord a smorgasborg. And although I am intrigued by the idea of a sandwich fort, as a rep of the Swedish DLC and Filmcast listeners, I feel I have to take a stand. That said, how would you build a sandwich fort? Personally, it brings to mind another fine Swedish tradition, the smorgasbarta, i.e. a sandwich cake. Try it sometime. They are delish. Well, this is the ombudsman for the smorgasbord signing off. Oh, and remember, better to be bored in your Borg than having a Borg on board. Regards. Pretty clever.
Well done.
Pretty clever. So, yes, I will admit that my entire life I've been calling it a smorgasbord, which evidently translates directly to sandwich fort. Instead of sandwich board, which is what you're talking about when you get a smorgasbord. So I am duly corrected. Thank you, Matthias. Next, you'll have to correct me on how to pronounce your name because I'm sure I got it wrong. But I will never make that mistake again. Smorgasbord, not smorgasborg. Because a borg is a fort.
And I'm back ever start, Jeff, if you ever start a video game company, you should definitely call it Sandwich Fort Games.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
It just sounds like an indie game company. You'll make it'll be released by A24. You know,
I love
it. It'll work out really well.
Sandwich Fort. Yeah.
Sandwich Fort Games.
Just to
smorgasbord.
Put a highlight on the actual parting gift here in that trying a smorgasbord, which I'm sure I'm mispronouncing also, This is the sandwich cake. This is a real thing. The Wikipedia page says, a smorgasbord is normally made up of several layers of white or light rye bread with creamy fillings in between. The fillings and toppings vary, but egg and mayonnaise are often the base. Additional filling may vary greatly, but will often include one or more of the following: liver pate, olives, shrimp, ham, various cold cuts, caviar, tomato, cucumber, grapes, lemon slices, cheese, and smoked salmon. It is served cold and cut like a dessert cake. But the types of sandwich cakes vary from meat, fish, and combinations and are never sweet.
Oh, I was thinking of it in the other direction. I was thinking of it, great idea, cake in sandwich form. This is going to be no. great. And you said bread, then you said the cream. I'm like, yes, keep going. And then everything else was horrifying. And then I went, and then it makes sense. It's a sandwich that you eat as a cake, not a cake.
Yeah, this is a cake.
Also great. Yeah,
cake in form, sandwich in substance.
That's great.
Yeah, evidently a thing.
Well, sandwich in like way in which it's placed on your
palate. Yeah,
I mean, cake in terms of what? Yeah. That's great. That's awesome.
So there you go. Thank you for the correction and for the awesome parting gift. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on the show, send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Or, you know, if you have other corrections for mistakes I've made literally my entire life.
Any that I've made, keep them to yourself.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode of... I almost said TRS. That is weird. This episode of DLC.
take that, Alex. Yeah. Look who's here now, loser.
many thanks to Dan Trachtenberg and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Cherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can get swag for the show at dlcswag.com, which was created by Jesse J. Anderson. And if you'd like to make sure this show keeps going, support us at patreon.com/dlcpod. Our patrons, we owe a huge debt of gratitude. Thank you so much, patrons, for supporting us. Our top-tier patrons, our Hype Train patrons, get their names read out at the end of every episode, which I'm going to do right now. I have to tell you about these Hype Train patrons. Have you heard about them? Jason Novak and Taylor Wiggert, Octavian Ratsiu and Chad, Christian Bravery, Josh Peak, Peter Olberg, and Nick Strauss-Klein, Michael Stadler, Michael Buck, and Jackson, Travis, Mike Lombardo, and Soren Silk, and Yick, and the Spice Man Silencer, Albert of the Stuff and Junk Show podcast, Zachary White, Jonathan Spice Man Forever Schlepfer, Stu Goss, Nate, Kevin Brazel, Jenny, Ben, Scott Hughes, and Dan Palmino, and Malcolm King, and Jimmy Radcliffe, and Mark Gowland, Mitchell Ness, and Jonathan Putney, and Will with 1L Harris, Jeff Luxack, Matt Bradley, and Chris Zacharias, Victor Valenzuela, and Jonathan Talbert, Cheesy Bob, Scooby Diesel, Adam Denby and Hank Patton, Sasan and Rob Rickman, Riley Knox and Dan Flanagan, Anthony Goulas and Kyle Starr, Michael S., Andy Joyce, Matt Valdez, Relentless Rex, John Cisco, Curtis from Louisville, and comedian Aaron Trahan, and David Epp. Sure you can! Hyperboy 66, Scott Lambert, Brian Jordan, Joe DeFrank, Kevin Ede, Stephen T. Seifert, Tyler Buckwild Brode, Rob, Wonder Rob Dominguez, and Dwayne T. Robinson. All of these Hype Train patrons making this show possible. Thank you, one and all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right, that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.